You are now listening to Grinding True Crime Podcast with your host, Maddie Matt, Todd Fox, and Gabby Gap.
Police have identified more victims and plan on more than just the four murder charges filed today.
Confirm earlier reports of cannibalism.
The building was a scene of ghoulish slaughter.
A large kettle on the stove which held boiled body parts.
Identified more victims and
killed even more.
Plan on more than just the four murder charges filed today.
Had sex with some of his victims before he killed them, and that he was also a necrophiliac.
Hey, welcome into another episode of Grinding True Crime Podcast with your host, Maddie Matt, along with
Gabby Gab
and
Todd Fox.
And we're here to kick off another episode, but before we do, we want to let you guys know where you can find us. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Just type in Grinding True Crime. You can follow our page, like our page, subscribe to our page, leave a comment, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. If you want to just listen to us on any of your podcast streams, you can find us on Podbean, Spotify, Anchor, iTunes, Pandora, Podvine, and Zencaster. Or if you're outside of the U.S., you can continue to listen to us on Radio Public, Breaker, Pocket Cast, and Podchaser. If you are a Patreon member, we really appreciate all the support you do. And if you would like to become a Patreon member, all you have to do is download the Podbean app, and there you can select Patreon, and then you can donate whatever it is you want, and we appreciate every penny that you give. Also, just to let you guys know, it's been a long time since we went live, right? It's been a cool minute, and I know the fans missed that a lot, and we missed the interaction with the fans, but we got some good news for you. With all of our crazy schedule in place, we kind of have an idea of what we're doing. We are going back to live again. In fact, March 31st is going to be our first live for 2024. We will let you guys know the time we will go live. More likely, it will be morning time, our Pacific time. We're looking at maybe 9 a.m. Pacific time. So save your calendar, mark your time, or whatever it is that may be. We're looking more or less at 9 a.m. Pacific time on March 31st. That way, we can kind of give everyone a chance to listen, because I know a lot of our fans are from outside of the U.S., and we don't know their time zones. But if we do it at 9 in the morning, probably will, you know, get everyone included in this. So mark your calendar, March 31st at 9 a.m. Are we good with that?
Yep.
We're good.
There we go. So 9 a.m. Pacific time, March 31st, we will be going live again. All right. With all that being said, I'm out of breath. I think Todd Fox is going to give us a story today. And before we got on air, he mentioned it's going to be in his motherland. So let's let Todd Fox talk about his case. You got the floor, sir.
Well, this is a story that was recommended by one of our fans. I'll give her a shout out at the end of the story. it's one she recommended, said that Gabby would be very interested in. So we're going to give this one a shot.
There's going to be some wings to cut off.
Maybe. but it's from... And I apologize in advance, you know, half of my family is from Germany, and I haven't gone yet. It is still one of my bucket list things to do. And I was being
a
kid.
Are you prepping us, man?
I am prepping you, because there's a bunch of times where my family was like, you should learn German. You should learn German. And I'm all, nein! And then it doesn't work out. So I'm going to be slaughtering a lot of these German names, so apologies in advance.
Your ancestors is very disappointed in you, sir.
Thank you. I really needed that boost of confidence right at the beginning of the show.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's all good, brother. All
right. So our story will indeed take place in Germany. And again, here right off the bat, I don't know if it's pronounced Lübeck or Lubbock. So we'll go with Lübeck, even though that sounds French.
It does.
So the story tonight is brought to you in part by Ellie from across the pond. I'll just give her a shout out now. from Queensland, I believe she's from. She recommended this episode. The city of Lübeck has over 220,000 residents. It's the second largest German Baltic coast city in the state of, get this, Schleswig-Holstein. I don't know. Holstein, Schleswig. It's like, hey, you're a Schleswig. I don't know. It's the capital of Kiel. I know I'm slaughtering this, but we're gonna push forward no matter what here. The town of Lübeck has plenty of museums that are right on the riverfront Trove, surrounded by all sides. So it's like one of these medieval type built, I guess, cities that was able to withstand a lot of the wars that took place or conflicts in that area over the, you know, centuries ago. It's beautiful, but it's literally surrounded by, it's like one of those movies you'd see where the castle's surrounded by a river or a little lake, you know, like it's hard to, there's like a drawbridge to get in and out. It's that type of deal.
Okay.
It's pretty picturesque if you look it up. It's got beautiful weather, traditionally a peaceful city. We won't talk about World War One or Two in those areas. People get offended.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Marine Bockenheimer. She was born on the 3rd of June 1950 in Sarstad, which is just outside of Lübeck. Her family grew up in the Polish East area of Prussia. Her father was in the German army in the Waffen-SS. So he was a fighter pilot for the German army in World War II. So dude has some serious roots here. Once the war was over, the family did not want to be stuck in the communism country of what was East Germany belonging to Russia. So they came out west and set up roots as refugees. When her and her siblings were born in the late 40s and herself in 1950, her father was very strict military type, because again, a lot of those guys had, that's all they knew was war back then, and they continued that into their life the way that they were. And especially at that time, the German army was the best in the world. As far as being strict, and you know, before all the atrocities, I mean, they were an army to be messed with. So they took a lot of this stuff to their everyday living once the war was over, the ones that survived. So he was very strict on them even as a child. And then you couple that with the mother. Her mother had a very, very strong religious background, so strict on both sides was very tough, you know what I mean?
Damn, so, a short leash, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. And then you can remember too, like coming back to West Germany, if you know your history, the German soldiers who, you know, partook in the sort of, like, you were categorized as two, I mean, German soldiers were hated no matter what by this time on either side, but the ones that fought in East Germany were more brutal. I mean, they killed men, women, and children, plus they killed Jews. They raped the land of, you know, as they were making their advances into Russia. So they weren't looked upon greatly by even the most neutral or most, you know, westernized Germans by anybody. So those type of refugees that were coming back from the Eastern Front of the war, they weren't given any kind of like special treatment. They were looked down upon. I mean, they were hated. They were the reason why neutral Germans were hated. So yeah, the father and the family weren't looked upon good when they were trying to reintegrate into normal society, basically.
Okay.
He did avoid the Eastern German prison camps for for German soldiers by Russia, and likely if he went into those he wouldn't have survived. So he was lucky in that fact. He came back with heavy duty PTSD and, of course, a drinking problem.
That's not good for the family.
Exactly. We've seen that many a times in these stories, right, guys?
Absolutely.
And he would still, with all that being said, and him not being favored, you know, in the public eye for being an East German soldier, he couldn't find work. So the mom was having to work, you know, dead end jobs, and he was just, you know, taking from the family and drinking, you know, and being just an absolute jerk to the family as well. He had many anger issues too. So, you know, as Maureen was growing up, you know, she's growing up now in a world that's completely different from his world. You know, his world was war, and yes, there's still that whole, you know, Cold War going on in that area, but that had to involve with Russia. And I know I'm getting into a lot of history, but this is just giving you a layout. You know, Germany was more westernized at this time as far as the western part. So as much as you had the Cold War going on, West Germany was starting to adopt a little bit of the peace and love in the early to mid 60s. Mm-hmm. So that whole, like, you know, Woodstock type feel and the music was westernized. So Maureen now, around 15 or so, she's clashing with her conservative mother and her military father. So this is not good. And then the father would leave the two. He would just up and leave. And the mother remarried right away. She found somebody that was as indoctrinated into her religion as she was. Mm-hmm. And now the stepfather took it up a notch, and instead of just yelling at Maureen and her siblings, he's starting to beat them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wait, so the religious man was more physically aggressive with them?
Correct.
What the heck?
Yeah, at least the ex-soldier, with all the things that he did, you know, he verbally abused his kids, but he never laid a hand on him, according to Maureen and her siblings. But the stepfather came in right away and was throwing hands.
Hell no.
Yep. And so because of this, what do you think the mother did?
She was like, well, he makes good love to me in bed, so I'm not going to do anything.
Well, I guess that's a credible question to ask Gabby then. Did she choose the Wang over her kids?
Absolutely not.
Wrong. She chose the Wang.
She chose the Wang?
She chose the
Wang. Sounds about right. You know, those Germans really do lay down a hammer.
She is a crappy mother then.
She's all, nine, I will take the sausage.
She took the nine, all right.
Oh, I see what you did there.
No pun intended.
No, you know, it was very much intended.
My bad.
I was just kidding. But unfortunately, you know, we're not laughing about the abuse, obviously. But she did unfortunately take the side of her stepfather. And this would cause two siblings to leave the house. And one of them was Maureen at 16 years old. He called her a hippie and then a good for nothing and all this other stuff because she was just about wanting to be a free spirit. And he said, well, you could be a free spirit on someone else's dime, and kicked her out.
Mm. Wow.
They blamed her for a lot of the the arguments that the two would start to have. So
I don't blame them.
Yeah.
When you're a mother, you're supposed to protect your kids, not let people abuse them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And go ahead.
No, I said that must be scary to run away at, you know, as a teenager, 15, 16, whatever age you are, to run away from home. I mean, not saying I don't blame her. It's just probably, you know, that's a scary feeling, you know.
Well, not only that, I mean, think about it, too. I mean, this is still Germany that would take at least 20 years to start resembling something again because it had been bombed the hell out of. So, I mean, this took a while. I mean, maybe it was looking better by the time she was around, but this took, you know, decades before that country would start to get back on its feet in any way.
Yeah.
So now you're in a situation where you're 16 and homeless at this time. That's in a still war torn, trying to recover country. That's tough, you know.
Did they live together or they went their own way?
They all lived together, but when she was about 16, that's when the stepfather did all that stuff, and her sibling left. Her sibling went somewhere else, and she was on her own.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, it doesn't mention which one is left, but I believe it was one of her older sisters as well. So I'm not sure. So it did not take her very long as she tried to survive on the streets. Unfortunately, one of the things that comes with it, and I'm not victim shaming her or nothing, because it's not a victim case, but just the fact that, you know, this is what can happen when you're on your own because of certain situations. Plus, protection isn't really a big thing back then, but she gets pregnant at the age of 16. Yeah.
That's not going to make it better.
No. And still being homeless because this is someone that she just had a random meetup with. So it's not even someone that, okay, we got pregnant, can I live with you type deal. It's like, nope, you know, that was it. One and done. Dang. So
no baby daddy.
No baby daddy at this point. And this is where it's going to kind of rub people the wrong way. And we'll see if it does the same thing with Gabby. Again, she's 16 years old. You'd want her to keep the baby. And it's not an abortion issue. It's just the fact that she had a child and automatically she gave it up for adoption. Let me just ask your guys' opinion. Is with her current situation at this time, is it the right decision? Obviously, we're not going to talk about the abortion side of it, but should she have kept the baby and tried to raise it on her own, or is it the right situation to give it to somebody who possibly can give it a better life?
If we're not talking about abortion, then I would think it would have been better for her to just give it up for adoption because she can't even take care of herself. So how could she be able to take care of a child? So the right thing for her to do for herself and the baby would give it up for adoption.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with that. For the sake of the child, she is not prepared to take care of it. Him, her. Yeah, she's struggling to survive on her own. She's still homeless. What can she possibly offer that baby that's not going to be traumatic? But I am mad at her for being stupid. Because if you have nothing, the hell are you doing hooking up and getting pregnant in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta know that you have about a 90-95% chance of, you know, especially at that age, of being fertile. You know, unless something happened during the war or you have a defect, usually, you know, you're pretty fertile. So
yeah, if you can't live without it, then do something about your body so you don't procreate, or do it responsibly. But if you're just going to go and get pregnant and have a baby and then not be able to do anything about that. But yeah, the best choice is definitely for the baby to have a family. So,
I wouldn't say I can't blame her for that, because at that age, she's 16. She probably met someone who was probably 10 years older than her. And you know how some men are, they prey on the weak. And at that age and at the mindset she was, she's probably, you know, she's looking for anything to help her out. So he probably promised her and whatever, and hooked up with her and, you know, had sex. And then next thing you know, she's pregnant and he's gone about his business because he doesn't care. He got what he wanted. So we don't know the circumstances. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Just my thing bringing that up is like, you know, at least, you know, she gave the baby a chance. My only thing, the argument would be for her keeping it, was the baby is never going to know. And we'll never know her real mother. That's the only problem with that, because you would like for that to happen at least at some point, but it never happens here.
Yeah.
She would reunite with one of her friends from school shortly after this, and they began to, you know, hang out. He would help her get out of the cold and into a place and you know, like, at least help her stay off the streets, and the two would become really close until 1969 at the age of 18 in 68 she would get into a relationship with her friend, and her friend would get her pregnant, and as 1969 went along, they she began to struggle, and and the two kind of like broke up, and so she was back on her own, pregnant again. And now here's the thing that kind of like gets me, you know, throws me for a loop. We did a story not too long ago where there was two pregnant women that were at a club, and they were sexually assaulted. And we're like, what are two pregnant women doing at a club like 7 to 8 months into their pregnancy? You know, like, and we were both appalled, you know, all appalled by that. The 1969, you know, there's a disco going on, and she shows up nearly 9 months pregnant at the age of 18, or close to 19, and she would get sexually assaulted by a patron.
Wow.
Yeah, forced into a dark room in a secluded part just off the dance floor. And she was physically assaulted and sexually assaulted. And the guy was never caught. And, I mean, she suffered some pretty bad PTSD from this.
Dang.
And it's just hard to believe that, you know, like, she went to this disco by herself. Again, I'm not victim shaming her or anything, but like at 9 months, I would think you'd be at home, you know, or at least where you stay, you rest your head, you know, get some, you know, you're coming down the, you know, the lights at the end of the tunnel, basically. The kid's going to be coming out soon. But I guess the Bee Gees were a big thing, so she had to go.
Hey, the Bee Gees were pretty big back then.
Yeah. I always thought they were females when I heard them sing. I was like, wow, you know, I wonder what they look like. And I saw them, like, oh, no.
It's very disrespectful of you, sir. Very disrespectful.
They sounded like females, but they had, like, longer, prettier hair than I would ever have, and especially on their face, too. They had long beards.
That's why you were jealous.
Very, very jealous.
You're like, they can sing. They got all this hair. Nah, that ain't fair.
Yep. So, unfortunately, this attack on her would also have her go into labor a little bit earlier than she was supposed to. She was almost 9 months.
Mm-hmm. I thought so.
Yeah, and this would get her to go early term with a kid. And there was places that would do abortions at 9 months, you know, over there.
What?
Yeah, there was, but. Because it wasn't regulated at this time, still in the German area, but they did. But she did not choose this. She went to the hospital, but the moment she had given birth, the baby came out. She was asking for papers to sign it off to the state. She didn't want it.
Damn.
So for the second time, second daughter, she gave up right away.
You know, you can't make a habit out of this. Get your crap together and stop having kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing, Gab. She does this two kids too late. She goes back to school and she finishes up everything in 1971, graduating, and then she became a waitress, which is something she liked to do because at this time she developed a good personality. She was very talkative. She moved to Lübeck. And was getting to know everyone in the city. And people got to know her, and she was doing really good. And but the problem is, because of the way she was raised, because of the way she had daddy issues, mama issues, she craved love. And I think that's what got her into trouble with getting pregnant. And she began to she would fall in love very easily. And with the wrong men, like you guys said, and Matt said earlier, taking advantage. She's still a young, good-looking girl at this time. She began to date the manager at the restaurant. And she felt really good because he was, for the first time, the first guy that was into her, that would treat her nice. And he had an apartment just above this picturesque little restaurant. Sort of cafe that was like right on the edge of the city, overlooking the river that separated the town from the next town. And it just looked really beautiful. And he said, oh, move in with me. So she did. And, you know, she felt like this guy's the one, and she's turning 22 at this time, and well, he gets her pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
See what I mean? That's on her. It's on her.
Yeah.
Fool me once, same on you. Fool me twice, same on me.
Fool me three times, I gotta close my legs.
Just you got dang right.
Just kidding. Some women are gonna be like, how dare him?
I mean, she should have closed her legs after the first one.
It takes two to tango, okay? To be fair, it takes two to tango.
Just it takes two. It definitely do.
So, this man's name was Christian. And Christian, he did the thing that every responsible man that gets a woman pregnant says to her, which is, I'm not ready to be a father.
I'm over here thinking, no way, he married her?
Yeah, I knew what Tom was going to say the moment he said.
He was like, wait, so if I put my wang in there, that means your stomach gets bigger? I did not know that.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my favorite. Bad.
It won't happen again. I'm sorry.
Off with his wang, too, then.
Exactly. So, as we know, if you do not hit the abort button in 9 months, you know, barring anything unfortunate, you become a father. And November 14th, 1972, she had her third daughter, and they decided to keep this one. Her name was Anna.
Wait, so, they decided to keep this one? I thought you said he wasn't ready.
He wasn't ready, but she forced him to stay in a sort of semi-relationship. So he's like there, and it's like one of those like where he's watching TV and she's like, babe, should we keep the baby? He's like, yeah, give me some more Cheetos. You know, it's one of those.
Sucks, so, but dang.
Yeah. So Maureen tried to, you know, she's like, you know, third time's a charm. I'm going to step up and I'm going to be a mother. So there you go.
Why do I have a hard time trusting it's going to last?
Well, let's see what happens. First, Maureen thought, you know, she's believing the hype that, you know, they're trying to reconcile. It's one of those things where it's on 1 week, off the next week. And, you know, there's really no commitment on either side that really points to something long term. But she still has faith that Christian, you know, with him being a general manager at the restaurant now, and she still has a stable place for him to live, and everyone likes her in town, you know, that this is going to work out. Eventually, he will get on one knee and the knight in shining armor treatment, and everything will be all good, just like every fairy tale from Disney. But not so much. Once she gave birth to the baby, Christian was too busy to help out with a kid. And basically, she was working and had no money, or at least they were scraping by, or she was scraping by. He wasn't able, or wasn't completely stated if he was able to or wanted to pay for a babysitter. He didn't have any family that, you know, a mother that could watch the child. She was estranged from her family. So the responsible thing to do is, well, bring the baby chair down and, you know, waitress and have your kid in the background somewhere at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how Anna became a sort of mascot for that little restaurant. Patrons would come by, maybe bring her a little stuffed animal as she was getting bigger. They would see Maureen feed her food while she then went to the kitchen, brought out a plate for someone else to eat, and then go back and wipe the little child's face and so on and so on. And maybe say, hey, I got to take a 2-minute break. I got to change the diaper. That kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So it got even better.
I hear the sarcasm in your voice.
Yeah, because this cafe, as it turned into the evening hours, would turn into a bar. And, mm-hmm. Well, the way you get promoted is, you know, you got to move to the bar, and bartenders get tips. So, you know, better tips other than breakfast and that kind of thing. So while the child is about a year, two, you know, 3 years old, she's living the bar life, you know. She's in one of the booths playing with little dolls, and while people are getting drunk and picking up on each other, she's in that environment. Mm. So that's not exactly kosher, but at this time there's really no DCFS looking into anything else like that. So it is what it is, basically. And people are like, hey, that kid over there looks very cute, huh? You have another
shot. Hey, my sister used to go. My oldest sister would go with my dad to the bar, to the pool hall with him.
Really?
Yep.
Well, she might have some stories in, right?
He couldn't let go of the drink, so yeah, she had to come with him. Oh, man.
I know your dad, no offense, but your dad was probably like, you know, like, hey, you wanna go get a drink with daddy? And she's like, not really. Okay, let's go.
All what?
Okay, let's go. Like automatically cutting her off.
The good old days, right, Tom?
Yeah, exactly. Ay, ay, ay.
I was going to say something. I wonder if the mother thought about the other two, her older two daughters that she gave up. You know, now that she kept this one and is becoming a mother, in a sense, the best she can. I wonder, did it cross her mind, like, you know, dang. You know, I wonder what my other two daughters are doing at this time. Or, you know, I wish I could have took care of them. I wonder if that crossed her mind.
That will come up later. That will come up later, because there's something that's going to throw you for a major twist in this story. Like if you think it's going somewhere now, wait till you see what happens. But that will be a part that will be brought up. And remind me if for some reason I gloss over it. But there is a part to that as well.
Sounds good.
So again, you're not getting any kind of like normalcy for the daughter here. She'll be 5 years old. She'll be able to go to school and everything. They have really nice schools over there. Things are looking up for the town in Lubbock, but it's still the hippie age, you know, the tail end of it. And you know, so she's growing up and everything else like that. And you know, the mom works late nights, you know, as a waitress. So she'll get home after cleanup or whatever, you know, she goes, although she's not traveling, she's still going to bed around 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And as her child Anna is growing up, she is, well, when school's not in, as a young girl, she's outside playing. And so a lot of the people in the town see her every day. They like her. She has a very bubbly attitude. Says hi to everybody, very, very friendly, loves anybody that has animals. And she's very cute from what the people said. And just, you know, they feel bad because they know the situation, that the mom's asleep and they're letting a little child out there to play, you know. And this is 1980 at the time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And because of this, we are going to have a date. And May 5th, 1980, just a few months before I was born. Oh, yeah. what's that?
I said, yeah, that's right. You're.
Yeah, yeah. It's the name of the restaurant was Topaza or something like that. And Marine was fast asleep again after the night shift. And her daughter was only 7 years old at the time. And she was out doing her thing. But the night before, she had come upstairs to go to sleep, and she woke up her daughter, Anna. And Anna, at 7 years old, already pretty feisty, very cute, but feisty towards the mom because she's probably been through this crap way too much. And when a seven-year-old tells you, hey, I got school tomorrow, like, can you keep it down?
She's very responsible.
Yes. And the two would have an argument. And Maureen was...
The 7-year-old and the mom?
Yeah. And Maureen was not too happy with her, said a few choice things. The daughter was kind of crying and upset and yelling back at her and sort of like closing the door, and they went to sleep. Mm. And Marianne was just assuming it was, just another, her daughter was being a little jerk. She's going to sleep. She'll wake up around 12 o'clock and, she'll see her after school and they'll talk it out or whatever. Here's the problem, though. Anna, at 7 years old, was ahead of her time. And instead of, you're asking a lot for a seven-year-old to get up in the morning, take care of itself, feed itself. I'm acting like it's an animal. But
yeah, you said itself.
Herself. I'm sorry. Wrong choice of words. But you're expecting a seven-year-old girl to, again, feed herself, take care of herself, get herself ready for school, get to school, be in school, come home, all that responsibility while the mom is snoring away. That's a lot to ask. And then for her being so feisty at seven and being upset with her mom, she's like, you know what? The hell with mom. I'm not going to school today. At seven.
Dang.
Yeah. At 7 years old.
You told her.
Yeah. And she did not have to go very far to school either. This is the thing. It's maybe 500 yards, which it sounds like a lot, but it's not. So it's maybe about a block and a half to school, something like that.
Well, what, four football fields?
Something like that, yeah. Now let's tell you something too, or let's bring this point up about Maureen. Again, you're thinking of a mother that's struggling, right? That's still living upstairs above the restaurant. You would think she doesn't have money, and if she did, she's saving up to get somewhere better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you guys guess what a former hippie or still holding on to the hippie age, her prized possession and most of her money went into?
What's that? No, I'm joking.
Weed.
No, but she did partake, but it wasn't weed. We're talking about an actual object.
Oh.
Or possession.
Probably her car or something like that.
Close. Can you guess?
Motorcycle?
No.
I don't know.
I don't know. Donkey and carriage?
The mamas and the papas.
Something close to that. It was sort of like the what's that, the Scooby-Doo van?
Yeah, the
Oh, right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Oh my god, what are they called?
The bug.
Well, it was a Volkswagen van, but I'm trying to remember what the Scooby-Doo van was called, but she had a van with, it was painted like custom, so she spent good marks or whatever they call a German Deutsch marks or whatever. Yeah, she spent a lot of that on the Volkswagen van, where it had paintings and hippie things and flower power and all that stuff all over it. And
no wonder the woman is struggling.
Yes.
Nice choice of priorities.
Exactly. And that very morning, when her daughter does not go to school, she actually had to wake up early around 10 for a 12 o'clock appointment to take the van to a newspaper that was going to make an article on her customized van, because it was one of a kind and nobody in the area had one like her or a car that cool like her. So they were going to do an entire article and a photo shoot.
Wow. So
she got up for that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So at this point, she returns home around 1 o'clock. It's close for the kids to be home. She figures she'll approach Anna and talk about their disagreement. And 1 o'clock comes and goes. Dodge
A100.
Say again?
The Dodge A100.
Oh, the Dodge A100. Okay. That sounds about right. But yeah, it's a little bit different, huh? It was called the mystery van, right? Or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's the mystery van.
There you go. I knew I was going to remind you. You just had to give me a little shred of something. Used to watch that show all the time. Raggy?
I never watched it, to be honest with you.
Really?
Never watched Scooby-Doo.
I would have got away with it, see, if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
I do remember the van, though. I do remember watching them getting in the van and stuff like that. Like clips of it. Like, when it would come on, I'll just turn it. But I do remember that van.
We used to have a van like that growing up. Well, similar. It was a little bit different. But that thing, the horn.
Oh, no.
We would call it the Roadrunner because that's how it sounded. Beep, beep.
I always remember, too, I'm like, dude, Shaggy is so high. He always had the munchies. A little, hey, Scoop, can we get some pizza and some sandwiches? Like, he was always asking for the most random stuff.
And he was always scared.
Yeah, it's like, there's a ghost over there. I'm hungry, Scoop. You? Are you?
Oh, yeah, that's signs of the munchies.
Yeah, all the time.
So she all her money and possession into that. Like, that was her prize possession.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy.
That's all she was into at the time. She was, like I said, she was still holding on to the Bee Gees and the disco and all that stuff.
Crazy.
But anyway, we talked about 7-year-old shouldn't have all that responsibility, shouldn't be that independent. You know, maybe you think of a 15-year-old like that, but nope. So you're moving on now. It's getting later and later in the evening, and it's 9 p.m. German time before she actually calls the police and she says, hey, my 7-year-old is missing.
Ooh.
And again, you would expect this, and she told the story, and the police were thinking she's talking about a 15 to 18 year old girl. She's talking about a 7-year-old. And right away, I mean, we've seen it over here in America too, where you have a 15 year old teenager basically, or high schooler, and they go missing. The police really don't take it too serious at first, unless there's some evidence that you could say, hey, look, there's a threatening text, or I have her on camera being snatched by somebody. If she's just not showing up, they'll be like, oh, that's just kid behavior, that's teenager behavior.
Yeah,
like, she'll be back later.
Yeah, calm down, give us 24 hours and then call us back. But no, with usually when it's 12 years old and younger, for the most part, the police, even here, are on it. They're like, hey, we have to open up a missing persons, like, right away. There's an Amber Alert. That kind of deal. So the police start investigating right away. It gets out because, like I said, it's a small town, even though there's 220,000 people there. A lot of people know of Anna because of visiting the restaurant, which is very well known. They take to the streets as well. You have a lot of people looking for this little girl. And, people are very, very afraid that something happened to her. And later that day, a woman comes the next day, comes into the local police station and says her fiance, 35-year-old Klaus Grabowski.
That sounds pretty German.
Yeah, that's very German. You get the Klaus going on right there.
You pronounce that really good.
Whatever. That's as close as I can get to it. There's something saying, you messed that up. She said that her fiance, Klaus, confessed something very bad to her, and she felt that it had to do something with Anna. And once they had told, or she had said that, hey, you need to look into my fiance, police started to,
No, nobody's saying.
Oh, sorry. I thought I heard something. My bad. She told investigators that she was aware of Anna because Anna would come visit them to play with their dog, or their cat, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Anna was, remember we said that she was very friendly to animals? And Klaus and her had a very affectionate cat. So she would come by on her way to school and ask to pet the cat if it was in their yard. So the 35-year-old on this day, May 5th, 1980, would allow the girl to come into the house, as she stated, with his fiance already at work. And the 35-year-old was a butcher. He asked the Anna if she wanted to come in and see the new cats that he had up in his room. And she's 7 years old. She may be street smart, more advanced than other children at this point, because of her circumstances. However, she wasn't. Yeah, she was still a little kid, and she wasn't aware of this kind of depraved behavior from an adult. Mm-hmm. So she fell victim to this creep and a piece of trash. And as soon as he got her to go into the second story room, he grabbed her and began to tie her up. And this part's, again, kind of, you know, if you want to fast forward, go ahead, because this is crimes against a child. He would beat her and sexually assault her. And he held her captive for at least 2 hours before taking her, his fiance's tights and strangling her. He placed her into a box and then took her out that evening to a shore, by the shore of the canal and the river, and buried her in a shallow grave. And this is just, you know, like that. Like, it was just like a crime of opportunity. And he took full advantage because of the circumstances of what was created with her mom and the sort of, what do you call it? The ability for her to be on her own. You know, like, he took advantage of all of that. So, the police knew where he was going to be. He had a routine, Klaus, later that evening, because it was the next day. And around 9 o'clock, almost 24 hours after they started for the search, they found him at his favorite bar. And when he showed up, Klaus was like, "I knew you were looking for me." And he said that bee ratted on me. So he knew his...
Wow.
Yeah.
So he didn't deny it at all.
Didn't deny it at all. And he actually had... When they went back and got to search his house even further, they found that he had an escape plan. He was going to leave the country. So he knew what he was doing. So what's that?
That's sick.
Yeah, it is sick. And so this creep, this wasn't his first rodeo.
I figured it wasn't his first one.
Yeah, he had a pretty lengthy past with child molestation. He had molested a 6-year-old girl and an 8-year-old girl and was accused of many others, but not convicted. When he went to, when he was convicted for the 6- and 8-year-old, Germany at this time would, you know, obviously, I think Gabby's going to become a fan of them, realizing what they would do, because they would perform different castrations.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they would do the physical off of the balls, or they would chemically castrate somebody.
Dang! So they would just grab his balls and put it in some
acid
and. Ah!
I don't know if it was acid, but
I think it was.
You remember RoboCop?
I try not to, but go ahead.
You remember the scene where homeboy drives his truck into the acid?
Oh, yeah.
That's probably what his balls look like.
No, I do know that they would, with as far as like they would do it physically, and then chemically they would give him shots of this, and I'll get into what they would do, but it would basically block, it would shove estrogen into you and block the testosterone. So instead of being like, "Yeah, Leo, I don't mind doing those kinds of things to young adults," you'd be like, "Well, I just don't feel like doing it anymore." You know, like, which,
careful, Todd.
A lot of estrogen right there. If you
careful, Todd.
I'm just saying. It would block your hormones.
Don't go there, Todd.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying it would make him change their mindset, but it just would take away the urge to do those things. That's what they said. I'm just going by how Germany
going by the books, right?
Yeah, you know, going by the books. I just used a little bit of humor to emphasize what I was trying to say.
Anyway, so what did they do to him?
Moving on. So he actually the castration part by Germany was not something that was being enforced. So here's the deal. He was gonna be able to keep his wang and keep his testicles, but they threw that on the table as far as like, well, hey, you know what? You're gonna face some serious jail time, or we can chemically castrate you. You go to these programs, you have a probation officer, we check in on you, we make sure your urges are still in check. If you're still having these urges, we either move on to the next part of the castration, or we just put you back in jail and you stay in jail. So he chose the which is basically the plea deal, chemically castrate me, and you know, I'll rehabilitate, I'll go through all your programs, I'll do whatever it takes. I don't want to go to jail. So he was given that option and he took it.
Wow.
Yeah. But here's
somebody to choose to be castrated.
Yeah. Wow. And, but here's the thing, Gabby. This kind of castration that they did, it's not a permanent castration. It's sort of just blocking your hormones to where you don't have a sex drive.
Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah, and this is reversible.
Oh, wow.
It's reversible. Yeah.
That is stupid.
So it's not
shouldn't get a choice.
He shouldn't, right?
So it wasn't a gruesome castration.
No, it's sort of something like, okay, what I can equate it to, it's sort of something like when men go in and get their tubes tied. You know what I mean? That's basically what it is.
I didn't know you had tubes.
I didn't know we had tubes, dog.
I was told I have tubes. No, however they stop your...
Vasectomy?
Yeah, there you go, vasectomy. How are they stop your little...
I don't know if
your fish from swimming.
What if they got to have tubes out there?
I hope you don't go get your tubes tied.
Yeah, man. Because if they tell me I got tied my tubes, I've been living a lie. That's all.
I'll be like, doctor, can I get one of those bow ties, please?
That's a good one, Todd.
Sorry.
It's all good. Now you got me talking like this.
Yeah. Did you have a chemical castration?
I'm messed up.
I agree.
Stop it. Let's get back to the story. All right.
I'm sorry. We're way off right now. Oh, man. So,
I just pictured Todd with his tubes.
Oh, no. Why would you picture my tubes?
Why would you picture Todd?
Because I'm thinking you have ovaries.
Oh, my God.
Dude, get your facts straight first.
I mean, we all knew what he meant. It came out.
Listen, I don't give the best explanations, okay? I'm sorry.
For example, have that in chat with your wife.
Hey, the listeners, when you get to this point...
With your woman?
When they get to this minute mark, yeah, they're gonna be
like, what were we talking about again?
I'm sorry, your future wife needs to know this.
Yeah, she needs to know about my tubes.
So, I was just saying, because I was saying, so it's not a gruesome castration, and that's when you said, you know, it's equating to, you know, men getting a vasectomy, is what you say.
Yes.
It's reversed.
The V word.
I'm helping you out, brother. Let me help you.
I appreciate it.
Okay, what is a vasectomy doesn't... Yeah, you run chances that your drive can be less than normal. I mean, less than usual, but that's really rare. It doesn't affect you like that. What the hell? Like, what is that going to do?
Well, this one this one is shots that it pretty much prevents you from having a
sort of libido, like a real good libido. Like it knocks it down. It's pumping estrogen into you. It's making your body, you know, it's making your body create more estrogen than freaking hormones. So you're not really feeling it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the sick mind is a sick mind.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
And why not just pour acid in his brain? Why not just drop him in a barrel with acid? I mean, just doing the country a favor.
I know. I think Germany was still trying to be PC at this point, but they still had some stuff that was outside the box. So, I mean, I don't know. But he got 4 years into... Well, he was getting 4 years into his sentence, basically. So he got that sentence in 1976. He avoided jail. He was chemically castrated. He was with his fiance, but he would complain from time to time to his doctor that sexual intercourse just was not the same, or he was having extremely hard times, no pun intended, getting it hard to sexually gratify himself or her. So,
dude, wait a minute. Hold on. Uh-huh. Out of all this, what I got is he's still with his fiance.
Correct. But this is after the castration. We're going back. Like he's still with his fiance. He's not marrying her. So but he's in a relationship with her, and he's having a hard time, basically. Having a hard time. So
wait, but this is after what he did.
I know. Yeah. He has no shame.
And that stupid broad is still with him.
Yeah.
What the heck?
I'm shocked on that level as well that she's still with him, even though, but, and she's the one who told the cops about him.
Yeah, she tells, she tells about, like she, I guess having that dealing problem wasn't a deal breaker for her. It was the murder part in 1980 where she took offense and went to the, but this is, he was castrated before he did the stuff to.
Okay, so this is before the little girl.
This is before the murder. This is before the murder, yes.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so we're going back. I'm sorry if I didn't put that out there, but...
Okay, yeah. Okay, this makes sense. Okay.
But she still stays with him as he had that past with the kids, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she's with him, and he's trying to prove to the state and prove to the government, prove to anyone that's handling his case that I'm a functioning citizen of Lubbock. I'm a butcher. I have a full 9 to 5. I have a woman that I want to marry, but we're having a hard time sexually. Like, I want to move on. I'm going to all your classes. And the local government wasn't really exactly buying it totally. So they kept like pushing it to the side. Like, yeah, whatever, bro, you know, enjoy your estrogen. But he went to a city outside it. And for whatever reason, he began to get a psychiatrist there. The psychiatrist was like, I think he's learned from his mistakes, and ordered the castration to be reversed.
Mm.
So at the time, not too long before he abducted Anna and did what he did to her, he had been recovering from the chemical castration and getting the, I guess, whatever they do to reverse it, whether it's more shots, whatever, but his hormone and libido was back, and that most likely was the reason why he did what he did, because
she was, did brought it back full circle. Okay.
It sure did.
So it's safe to say that if the judge didn't, or if they didn't allow him to reverse his castration, Anna would still be alive.
Correct.
So we have other people to blame for this as well.
Yes. And then you had the public scrutiny when not only the stuff came out about Klaus and the fact that he was given a second chance to be a freaking child molester and now a murderer. People were against Maureen for the way she was living her life, not being a responsible parent, not taking care of her daughter, And just the fact that her details came out, reporters found out she had two prior, you know, kids given up for adoption. People were saying she should have gave up Anna too. You know, there was plenty of people that came forward and said, I would have taken her. She was a bright spot. She was a ray of sunshine. It seemed to hurt the community more than it hurt Maureen. And Maureen was taking, you know, money for interviews and stuff like that. She was kind of making it into like she wasn't very emotional.
She was making it.
Yeah. So that was angering a lot of people. Just a lot of people. So we fast forward to 1981, and Klaus would deny the fact that he sexually abused the girl, even though the testimony was there, the evidence was there. The trial was going back and forth. Maureen was there every day. It was a really high profile case, obviously, for the European countries, especially Germany. And it was actually, you know, there's a lot of reporters there. Obviously, there's no television to cover it, but the fact that at certain times when she knew where a lot of reporters were there, Maureen would make big, show obscene gestures to Klaus, flip him off. She would yell and sort of take over the courthouse, to where the judge would threaten many times, including one time booting her out of the, because she got a lot of leeway because she was the mother of the child who was slain, but still you have to keep a courthouse in check. And she seemed to play up to the crowd, or to like putting herself above the trial and getting a lot of clout in the newspapers and in the media. So that was pissing off people, because it seemed like she was doing it for the wrong reasons. Like, you can generally, if you see a court case and a mother of a slain child or a kid or whatever, you could tell when it's genuine, right?
They're broken.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying to get attention and make a damn show.
That's what I meant to say. Thank you. That's exactly what she was doing. So, you go about the third day into the trial, and it's basically a circus because of how she's been acting. And on the third day, he would talk about how nonchalantly he lured her into the house because they put him on the stand, and Klaus was saying without any kind of remorse what he did to her. And it was disgusting everyone that was in the room, because he just went about it like it's something that you normally do. And once he got off the stand, the urologist doctor and the psychiatrist, the doctor and psychiatrist that said, hey, you know what, we're okay with this guy. And the urologist is the one that performed the reversal on the recommendation from the psychiatrist. Both gave their testimony. Both were ridiculed for doing it because they felt that, you know, everyone felt, including the state, that they'd contributed to Klaus doing the harm. So it was after lunch, 15 minutes before lunch started. Here's the twist. Ooh. Or 15 minutes before the second half of the day started, I should say, of the trial. Klaus is sitting with his lawyers, and people are starting to file in. Maureen looks over to her friend who's been supporting her and says, there's not that many reporters here today. And it looks like we don't have, you know, a lot of people didn't stay for the second half. And her friend was like, oh, that's weird. And so she goes, I'm going to go get some water. And so she gets up and walks towards the exit. As she walks by the exit, she bumps into Klaus's lawyer, who's sitting down, and she says, excuse me. And then without hesitation, pulls out a .22 caliber gun and unloads it into the back of Klaus. Right there, right then, in the middle of the freaking courthouse.
She did, or the lawyer?
She did.
Oh.
She was 2 yards behind Klaus, and she unloaded 8 bullets into his back.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? Now that you brought that up, I kind of heard about this. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know about the beginning, but I kind of know about that part.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it freaks everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't come close to hitting anybody else, thank God. But this dude is pretty much dead as he slouches over in the little box that he was sitting in. And, you know, he's dead pretty much before his head hits the table. Mm-hmm. There's a famous scene where it's after all the melee and she's already been arrested, where there's just a streak of blood where they try to drag him out of there because they thought she was going to shoot again. And there's just enormous amounts of blood on the floor. I mean, you could tell he's long dead.
Well, that trial's over.
Yeah. 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 She surrenders automatically. And again, there's no metal detectors in 1980. So she snuck that 22 caliber gun in there. Mm-hmm. She was jailed right away. But she had now a nation that would ignore the warts of the case. And she began to get a cult following and a lot of people, you know, cause a lot of former hippies, a lot of mothers that were scorned because of losing children or losing loved ones to crime. Now she had floods of sympathy and support.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of 32, the other thing that played on her in her way was the fact that she was a good-looking mother. She was still young. If you look up her pictures at 32 for that time period, you know, she looked like she could be on a Days of Our Lives or something like that, soap opera. But a lot of people went to the streets to rally around her, and they were happy that it was an eye for an eye type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the legal system did not like this because they want to have, innocent till proven guilty type deal. And this is not the way a courtroom should be. This changed things for many nations, looked at this case and were like, we cannot allow this to happen again. People can't be vigilantes. They can't take,
matters into their own hands.
Correct. And so this became a huge talking point for years to come afterwards. Whenever there'd be something like this come up, or the threat of something like this come up, this case would always be thrown into the mix about what needs to change, why it needs to change, stuff like that. So here's a problem with her taking the law into her hands. Technically, that case is still open.
It was closed because it never
Klaus was never convicted.
Never convicted.
Yep. So he died in the eyes of the law, an innocent man.
Mm.
So
in the eyes of the law.
Come on.
Yeah. The eyes of the law, he's friggin', you know. She was arrested, obviously, went to court, found guilty of murder. And she was, again, having people rallying around her jail cell, writing letters to members of clergy, and also for the clergy to get involved, also to government to get her released. She would actually try to commit suicide on a couple of occasions. A couple other smaller countries wanted to offer her asylum to leave Germany. You know, they offered the government, you know, they'll put her in political asylum just to get her out to calm things down. She would spend a total of 15 months in jail. And she would then have to go through psychiatry and everything else like that. And because now they didn't want her to commit suicide and everything. So it was tough on her. She, Christian was quoted, the father of the child is saying that, I can't believe that they would prosecute her for this. She had a tough life. And, you know, but he did admit that, that, and here's the thing, like, he stuck up for her, but he did hurt her case in the long run, because during trial and then afterwards, he would say that she did come to him and say that she purchased a 22 caliber Beretta for protection, because she felt that she would need it one day because the streets were getting harder for her. Christian wasn't in love with her, and her daughter would grow up, and she knows how it is to be on the streets. And if they didn't get along, you know, or just being a mother with a daughter and no husband, you know, they're easy marks. So she, that was her reasoning for getting the 22 caliber gun. But he also would say that after the murder of her daughter, that she said that she might have to use this real soon. She was quoted as saying that. So, So that's what the prosecution would use to try to get her locked up for good when the other trial came. And they tried to say that she was an unfit mother due to her other two children being given up for adoption, and that she was unfit with the one that she did keep, and that she craved attention, noting the van, noting her priorities, noting how she acted during the case, and how after her daughter was subsequently taken as well. She would get, after the 15 months of being incarcerated or psychiatry and all that other stuff, when her second trial finally came, she was convicted of manslaughter in the second degree and given 6 years in prison.
Oh, so she didn't get life.
No, she got a slap on the wrist.
Wow.
And she would wind up serving 3 years and getting a lot of people coming in, the German media especially, would interview her on separate occasions. Battered women would use her as a martyr as far as for what could happen if they're abused enough or given the courage. And they would use her as a shining beacon to their causes. Mm-hmm. And there'd actually be two German movies made about her, including a book as well.
Dang.
Yeah. Wow. And her story is, we're almost at the end here, but her story takes a couple other different twists. She would sell her story and make a lot of money for the book. And she was, the prosecution or prosecutor in her case would later come out and say that this is further proof that she was just in it for the money, and that she used her daughter's tragedy to further her life and get what she had really wanted in the long run, which was either fame and fortune or just fortune.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She would marry a German teacher who would travel to Nigeria, which she moved with him as he taught kids in underprivileged areas. And but then they would get divorced in 1990. And she would move to Sicily on her own dime. Where in 1995, she learned that she had pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
And her life story, she would get one more payday out of that in 1996, where a media group would buy that from her, and they would shoot her remaining couple years of her life, including get more deeper thoughts than she ever released in her book. And so this was kind of her memoirs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a pretty famous book. I didn't get the title of it. I should have. But they were able to film also and do a documentary on her before she passed away in 96. She never showed remorse for what she did, and always said that she would have did it again, and that she didn't feel like a hero, but it had to be done. My question to you two as we wrap up this story, was she doing this for clout? Did this come into her situation and she ran with it, or her feelings and what she did genuine?
It could be a little bit of both. I mean, a mother's love for her children are probably one of the strongest bonds there is. So the fact that that was her child and that was the only child that she did actually keep and, you know, kind of raise, she may have felt some love for it and for her. And the fact that this guy decided to do what he did to her in a gruesome way, she may have wanted to seek revenge on it. And also, too, she also took the opportunity to gain fortune from it. So it could be a little bit of both.
I'm conflicted because I do see her trying to grab onto the attention and make the most of it. I see her creating this show, which was not necessary. If you have something against the guy, obviously he abused your child and murdered her, you're going to come in there completely distraught and heartbroken and be ready on day one to shoot that guy and get your vengeance. But you're not going to make a show out of it and go on these interviews and just act like, eh, I'm good getting all this attention, you know?
Correct.
Because of the way she was raising Anna, I can't vouch for this woman that she completely loved her child. I think she was done giving her kids up for adoption. And because she was kind of in a relationship, like she had a little more security where she was. But you don't prioritize a stupid car over getting your kid in the right circumstances if you are determined to be a mother this time. And the fact that you just let your child go off alone, know all kinds of strangers, be responsible for herself, nah, you didn't really care about the child.
That is true.
So I honestly can't say it was mainly for love and because she was heartbroken. I think she absolutely took the opportunity to make it for herself.
Very good points, because one thing I was going to bring up too is, like, you know how, like, we've seen these cases, you know, especially locally here in America, where, you know, they lose a son or a daughter, the victim's parents or, you know, one of the parents will be an advocate for maybe changing a law, like Megan's Law, Amber's Law, and they'll go out and they'll be like, let's fight against pedophiles. Like, they become, like, not about themselves, but they put it as their child being the martyr and them trying to fight for that change through their loss.
And
yeah, I didn't see any of that in this.
No.
So, you know, maybe she could have fought against being able to reverse chemically castrated people. I don't know. She could have used Anna's name more in a positive way.
Yeah, like had more purpose to protect more kids.
Correct.
That was all about her.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where I fell on that one. I agree with you guys.
Why you gotta do that? Now, hey, question.
Yeah.
Did her other two daughters eventually, like, enter into her life? I know you wanted to touch on that a little bit, or do we know?
They did not. And there's, from what I know, they still don't know their real mother.
Mm.
So, unless they've done some stuff with genealogy lately, last I heard, she'd never met them, and they never met her.
Okay.
So.
It's better.
Probably, yeah. Most likely.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that we can take out of this is, you know, like, maybe those kids had better lives. We don't know for sure, but, you know, it could have been a double tragedy. You know, she, Maureen could have lost two or all three of them, you know? So, but, I'll post some pictures of what she looked like. She got a lot of sympathy for her looks. She was very, very, astute when she gave her interviews. So, she was very believable. And then, yeah. Pretty crazy story.
It was.
Thank you, Ellie, for recommending this one.
Thank you, Ellie. Shout out to Ellie. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Tom, for breaking down that story for us.
Another lesson that if you're not equipped to raise children, don't have them.
And don't bring them into the workforce.
Man, like, poor... I get it when you're struggling. I understand in the beginning it's like, obviously this guy did not want to be a dad, you know? And so in the beginning, you have nothing else to figure out. So you're working and doing that. But it's like, at a certain point, like, if you're going to decide to raise her and keep her, and you're going to say, well, this time I need to be a mother, then put your money aside, save your money so you can get her out of that situation.
Absolutely. I mean, because
not on mystery vans.
No, don't freaking waste it and let the child fend for herself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I'll put it to you this way. You know, I had my first daughter very young at 21, and I wasn't ready to be a father. And the only thing that saved me was my responsible mother telling me, you better become a responsible father. And my dad's, you know, passive aggressive, but my mom, my mom was going to take full, you know, like she was going to unleash the pearly gates of hell if I did not take care of my responsibility. And I did. And I owe it all to her. You know, like if I, my dad was like, well, yeah. And she's like, no, step aside, Ralph. Let me tell him how he's got to be a father. You know, like she made sure I was going to be responsible and be a good father and the best I could be. And if I didn't, I was going to feel her wrath. And I was scared of my mom. So I made the necessary changes. But see, that dude, Christian, he was 22 years old. I mean, maybe he didn't have that in his life. And you know, like most parents, you know, it takes to their 30s to, and I started to really grip everything on my own by the time I was in my 30s. But I mean, look at these two young kids. I mean, they were 18 and 22. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
Well, then protect yourself.
Exactly.
If you're not ready to be a freaking grown up, what are you doing?
Exactly. I mean, that's what comes with it. I mean, we all make mistakes or things happen, and you gotta own up to it. I think that's the difference with people is, the ones that own up to it and adjust to the situation and can face it and take the responsibility, and those that just want the easy way out and walk away, or, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, in it for the thrill, and then it's like, oh, I can't handle it. Bye.
Yeah. Oh, well, see you in 18 years.
Jesus.
Yeah, but that's the story.
Well, thank you, Todd Fox, for breaking down that story for us. And for those listening, we thank you. We're going to close it off right here. A quick reminder, the 31st, we'll be going live, 9 a.m. Pacific time. And also, continue to follow us on our platforms, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Just type in Grinding True Crime, and you can follow our page, like our page, and do all the other stuff to our page. Continue to listen to us on your podcast, Podbean, on your podcast stream at Podbean, Spotify, Anchor, iTunes, Pandora, Podvine, and Zencaster. And of course, if you're outside of the U.S., Radio Public, Breaker, Pocket Cast, and Podchaser. Well, that is it for today. We are going to be out of here in a few. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been another episode, and this is your host, Maddie Matt, along with
Gabby Gab
and
Todd Fox.
And we are out of here.
Toodles. Take care of your tubes. God.
Be sure to tie your tubes. Come back now here.
This guy.